Around the NFL podcast can drop mad bars on a rap verse.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast presented by the United States Marine Corps. My name is Dan Hansis, coming to you from a virtual room filled with some heroes. Greg Rosenthal, Mark Sessler, what is up, boys?
Big week. I remember like a couple weeks ago, no offense, Mark, but you know, we led the preview show with Colts-Browns, and it's like now we got six games better than that. This is a big week.
No offense taken. You know, as my, you know, my team took an ultra dirt nap a week ago, and they've somehow been erased from the landscape.
Maybe they'll be back. You know, everything could change very quickly, Mark. Yes, this is week seven, the preview for the Around the NFL podcast. You're going to get a recap from Greg and a mystery guest, Giants-Eagles, which leaves us, all right, a little rusty here. 32 teams. Four teams on bye. Two teams already played. Leaves us with 26 teams divided by two, 13 games to talk about.
Yeah!
I mean, Dan, it is, you know, you
college, baby.
You can do the math before the show. You had like 4 or 5 days before the show here to figure out the math versus now.
Well, that would be cheating, you know. That was all in real time, and that was special for me, and I'm proud to see improvement in 2020. A year where not many things have improved. But, boys, let's get into it. And you know how we do it every week. It's draft style. Picking every game. We'll also have our locks of the week. And that's a very big competition between us. But before we get to that, I want to talk about a little bit of Ravens news, boys.
Mm.
Yannick Ngakoue, now a member of the Baltimore Ravens, traded by the Minnesota Vikings. So he does a quick stopover with the Vikings, who nosedive this season, are now looking toward 2021. And Ngakoue gives the Ravens a proven pass rusher, which, Greg, that's a player they needed.
They do. You know, I think people outside of Baltimore probably don't realize how much their pass rush has struggled this year when they're not blitzing. Matthew Judon's probably not going to be there long term, so maybe Ngakoue is. And you only gave up a third and fifth round pick. In the event that they don't sign Ngakoue, there's a chance they could get a compensatory pick a year later anyway. So they're almost getting them for free. And it says more about the Vikings, who were willing to give up a second round pick a month ago. Now they move back around, maybe a round and a half, considering these two teams are very different. They're giving up on this season. They're looking to next year. And it makes me think Rick Spielman, their GM, and Mike Zimmer, their coach, who both got contract extensions before this year, I feel like they're safe. Like, and I would have thought they would have been safe, but to be making moves like this where they're almost trying to get worse for 2020 makes me think they're probably safe, and they've been given some assurances that they're going to get to see this rebuild all the way through.
Maybe.
That's interesting. I think it also depends what happens between now and the end of the season in terms of safety. But, you know, they've kept Rick Spielman around through various regimes. I think part of the equation here, and Spielman mentioned this today, was that Danielle Hunter, he is having surgery for a herniated disc, knocking him out for the year. And their whole plan all along was to have Ngakoue and Hunter together, and that plan has completely fallen apart. So I guess, you know, I'm just saying it's easy to pile on the Vikings, but maybe they thought, look, Ngakoue is not here long term in our eyes, and so we got something back. But you'd have to look at guys like Anthony Harris, their safety, and other players that maybe could be available before the trade deadline. If further moves happen for Minnesota, they're telling us we are giving up on this season. I mean, they look like they've given up on the field to me half the time.
No, even if they haven't given up, they've lost so many games now, they're pretty much cooked as it is. But nice pickup by the Ravens. All right. Let's get to the week seven action now. And I have the first overall pick, and I'm very happy to. I'm running to the podium to hand in the ticket for Steelers Titans. Oh, my goodness. Battle of the last two undefeated teams in the AFC. And this is a great game, not just because they're undefeated, not just because they're ranked number two and number three in the old Zeusers power rankings, although that feels like the driving momentum behind this game. I feel everyone. Like what this is like a really hard game to pick because Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry and the Titans offense looked so unstoppable this past week. And, you know, everyone is on fire, obviously, and rightly so, about Derrick Henry going off for 264 yards from scrimmage. But, you know, kind of the biggest takeaway for me the last couple weeks is that Ryan Tannehill is not just a guy that's going to approach his play from last year, but looks like the same guy. So it's like, okay, so you have Tannehill playing at an all-pro level, and then you put him into this mix with this great, solid, all-around team and Mike Vrabel, who's got this team coached up very well, against the Steelers, who are another team that's clicking right now on both sides of the ball. So you got Tannehill in the Titans offense. You got Minkah Fitzpatrick in the Steelers defense. You have no Taylor Lewan at left tackle for the Titans after a torn ACL. You have no Devin Bush in the front seven for the Steelers after a torn ACL. What an even, fun game. The ACL stuff, not fun. Everything else, I love it.
Yeah, you usually trust the team that's better, you know, offensively and the better quarterback, and it's so weird that that's obviously the Titans. I mean, I think the Steelers' offense has been fine. And James Conner looks a lot better in mid-October than he did in mid-September, and that's big for them. And Big Ben hit a couple long throws last week against the Browns, but he's more of a game manager. You hit it with Tannehill. He's a different player than he was a year ago because Tannehill is getting it done not just in play action, but he's not making mistakes in the straight dropback game. And there are some big-time differences, I think. He's not taking sacks anymore. And, man, he's amazing against pressure. And this is the game where that is going to be an ultimate test because no defense with, you know, that gets more pressure than the Steelers. No defense has more guys that deserve double teams. Stephon Tuitt and Cameron Hayward tortured your Browns last week, Mark. And it's like you don't even have to think about Dupree and Watt on the outside. Like, those guys on the inside alone deserve double teams, and it's really hard to know who to stop with this Pittsburgh defense.
It makes it a fascinating matchup. I mean, I watched left guard for the Browns, Joel Bitonio, who has been a rock for years, get pretty handled by Cam Hayward. Tannehill is a different quarterback than Baker Mayfield against pressure, though. I mean, we've been seeing this for week after week. He is willing to take a massive shot as he unfurls a deep dart into the end zone, and it's complete. When I think about Tannehill, it's kind of like, this brings hope to us all. You can be relatively average in your job for 8 years and then suddenly become a fascination to the eyes. And when I think of Derrick Henry, it's like, what does he remind me of? It's like if you cut a wall out of your house and dropped it off a 90-story building to the ground. That's what he feels like running downhill. And the combination of these two and their offensive line, the way that their interior line is beating
people
up.
You broke my brain with that house and 90-story building thing. I'm still trying to figure it out.
Honestly, like, I was showing some clips of this to my wife, Simone, and I don't know if she was intrigued by my analysis,
but
it's just what it looked like to me. Like, just gigantic, a gigantic bean coming down hill at you 200 miles an hour, and it shows. I mean, he wears teams down. This is a fascinating matchup because the Steelers, what they're good at, they are good at week after week. I trust them to be, I think they're better than the Ravens. I think that they, on offense, are being a little bit underrated because they have such a rich variety of weapons. And a Big Ben is Big Ben, but guys like Chase Claypool make this a completely different attack. They're fun to watch. This is a crazy game. I can't wait to see
it. It's like, baby, dim the lights. I have some Derrick Henry highlights to show you.
Hey, it's more impressive than my highlights, so, you know, no one's complaining.
Derrick Henry, if you're of a certain age, I think about Bo Jackson, I think about Herschel Walker. Just like, how are you that fast and that strong? How can you be bigger than everyone and faster than everyone, especially on that 95-yard run? Greg, it does not go unnoticed, Greg. Year after year, you know, you don't like Ben Roethlisberger. You have an issue with him. All sorts of issues,
what?
Really.
I have been a bigger fan of him than anyone on the show.
Last
I wrote a whole
week,
article.
No, wait a second.
He's underrated.
Time out. Last week, he was Big Breeze. This week, now he's been downgraded to a straight game manager. Next week, he's going to be, you know, Joe Flacco level backup scrub. What's going on here, man?
I wrote a huge piece on NFL.com saying he was the most underrated quarterback of his generation. Like, he's been a top five quarterback forever, but he's a different player this year. And I thought he showed some things last week, hitting some throws down the field, but they're a different offense. They're not built around Ben anymore. And that's why I have a really hard time picking this game, because usually you trust offense. But wow, like, this is such a test of how good the Steelers defense really is. Tony Romo, I thought, made a great point last week. The only way to beat them is not side to side. It's running straight at them. And who runs straight at you better than Derrick Henry? Like, who hits deep shots better than Ryan Tannehill, where I think the secondary for the Steelers has some weaknesses. So we're going to need the old Big Ben back out there. It's more a guy that I loved him in the past, Dan, and I want to see that guy pat. I want to see him
this
back.
This is not just you. I'm seeing this pop up on football Twitter. That it's kind of like all these subtle little shots of Big Ben's actually not that good this year. He's just kind of cruising along. And when I watch the games, I see a guy, maybe the numbers aren't there yet, but I think he is still, he's much more than a game manager. I think he's a huge plus player, and you're going to continue to see it this year. I don't know. One of us will be right.
Well, I think he's terrible.
He's still very good.
People will be won over when he is victorious in the AFC title game. I mean, I think this is a Mike Tomlin, Big Ben special this season. I can just feel it
right
within that they
won a Super Bowl with him as a game manager. They won a Super Bowl with him as a game manager, Dan. It can be done, but I think he'll get better. I'm not on the anti-Big Ben side. I see what you're doing. You're trying to paint me in a corner. I'm taking the Steelers to win this game. We should pick it.
Let's pick it. So you got the Steelers. What about you, Mark?
I'm going to go Tennessee by 1 point on a last-second field goal.
I'm kind of with you. I'm feeling you. I'm feeling the same thing. Very close game. Give it to the home team to pull it out. Oh, can't wait. That's a number. That's Andrew Luck in 2012. That's what that is. That's Joe Burrow in 2020. That's Trevor Lawrence to the New York Jets in 2021. Up next in the draft, Greg Rosenthal.
All right, I'm glad I can take Patriots 49ers off the board before any of you ghouls do it, because it's a big
one, Greggy. You need it, Greggy.
They need it. The Patriots do not want to fall to 2-4, but you know what?
You
the 49ers really need it too. They could fall under 500, and I'm fascinated to see two teams that I don't really trust either quarterback. So I don't trust their team as a whole. I know Jimmy G had a nice schemed up game last week and they worked it out. That's going to be tough to do week after week, but I'm looking at Cam Newton and the Patriots as the passing attack that is the even bigger concern this week, because if you go back to Cam Newton's last game before he played the Broncos, it was against the Raiders. He really struggled throwing the ball in that game. So I don't know if you can put everything on him missing practice and not having been conditioned going into the Broncos game. That's a factor, but a lot of it was him not being confident in his offense. There were some open receivers that he didn't pull the trigger. There was a chance to win the game late where he has a couple open receivers. Again, just holds on to it. It makes sense. He's new in this offense. He's not comfortable, but if they don't get up to speed soon, I don't think it's going to happen, because the running game, it's good, but defenses have really shut down the read option plays since week one, and so they need Cam Newton to start finding their receivers, Mark.
Yeah, I'm with you. We always talk about the Patriots taking a leisurely month to figure out who they are on offense. Well, I don't think that journey is over by any stretch of the imagination, unless they want to be an attack centered around Ryan Izzo. There's a lot of Ryan Izzo in our life right now, and it's a very odd group of skill position players. And, you know, a guy like Julian Edelman, who, when I watched the Seahawks game, he shined in that game, and so did Cam. You thought that was the way forward. I mean, he's just vanished. And they're resorting to bizarre trick plays at the end of the game. But then I flip it over to Jimmy G, and watching that Rams game on Sunday night, here's a guy who threw beyond the line of scrimmage twice. I mean, they are leaning on yards after the catch, and they've got some guys that can make that productive, and they thumped the Rams in that first half. So, I mean, you know, it's called scheme right there. But I have to wonder if Bill Belichick has special knowledge of Jimmy G. And maybe that's a little X factor here. But secondly, does Shanahan really trust Jimmy G? I don't see this passing attack telling me yes on that one.
Yeah, I think there might be a little issue there between coach and quarterback at San Francisco, but also we know that he's safe because we've seen the options behind Jimmy G. That it's funny because we just talked about where Big Ben fits. Is he, you know, a high-end game manager? That's what I see Jimmy G as. And when he's healthy and the opponent is right, he could carve up anybody against good competition. He should be okay, but he's not a guy that maybe lifts you to the next level. And with the Patriots, it's like, Man, this is why Tom Brady struggled so much last year. They didn't put anything around him. There's no explosive playmakers, and Cam Newton is back there holding the ball, waiting for guys to get open, and you just put your quarterback in such a tough situation, Greg. And yes, that's how the league works. Everybody saw, okay, the Patriots are going to try to turn themselves into this read option, run Cam into the ground, go nuts. Well, the NFL adjusts. So if they're taking that away, we're kind of back to square one, not at the same level because Tom Brady obviously was a statue in the pocket, but where they're going to struggle to score points on a consistent basis.
They will. I mean, this is a team that's good at stopping the pass, not necessarily good at stopping the run. So the 49ers look at that. They think this is a good matchup. And the Patriots, it has to be mentioned, have had all sorts of offensive line issues. They lost Illuminor, right, who was ranked as a top 10 tackle on PFF. He's going to injured reserve, but they do get back. It sounds like Shaq Mason and David Andrews this week return to practice, and that's huge. Last week against the Broncos, the Patriots only had a single offensive starting lineman in the same spot that they started the year, and so that's going to help them, but they have to win games different ways, and usually Belichick has the edge with the coaching matchup. I don't know. Patriots fans know what I'm talking about. Think back to the early 2000s. Who was the one coach that you knew was going to give Belichick's defense, even at their peak, all sorts of problems? It was the mastermind, Mike Shanahan. And Kyle Shanahan does a lot of the same stuff. I don't really trust Bill Belichick in a Belichick.
Man, you're shook, Greg. I don't even need to ask your P scale right now at the Patriots, because it is, you're in a bad way. You're nervous. I've been saying they're not special anymore, and now I'm starting to hear it creep into your mind, the doubts. Are the Patriots just another also-ran team? Is this the time now? Is it time to say goodbye to all the wonderful gallops into January? Mm. I think it is, and I think you're seeing
it's
it.
Early. It's week six. They're gonna
not that early.
Week seven. They got time to prove themselves. But this is a big one. That's why I wanted it.
All right.
I do not count out Bill Belichick in October. That feels like a perilous move, Dan. But that is sort of your move.
Well, no. It's also like you mentioned, Mark. You're like, oh, the Patriots. They always figure it out after September. That was the old Patriots. This is
feels
now. That was then. Let's move on. Mark, you're up next in the draft.
All right, well, I am quite annoyed that Greg took the game that I was quite fascinated with, but I'm going to go Green Bay at Houston, another very interesting matchup. I don't think the Texans, they feel like a weird team that could suddenly pull off like four wins in a row. I don't think it's happening this week necessarily. This is a good bounce back spot for Green Bay after getting thumped by Tampa Bay last week. They're not dealing with the Bucs defense this time around. I mean, this Houston defense is a hot mess. You can run on them, you can pass on them, you can do whatever you want, you can have your fancy. So I think this is a good job for Aaron Rodgers, for Aaron Jones, the whole crew to get back on track. Because, you know, it feels like in 2020, like rest in peace defense in general, because the Packers have issues of their own. And you're going to have these games where when a good one lines up like the Bucs did, you know, I could come out of that really concerned about putting pressure on Aaron Rodgers and what that might mean for Green Bay's overall attack. But I just want to give some of these teams kind of a mulligan. I just think that Green Bay is more the team that we saw before that. Green Bay's defense, though, whether you measure it by deep metrics or just the naked eye, they are struggling. I mean, last year it was all about Aaron Rodgers saying, hey, we finally have a defense. Well, now you finally definitely do not. And the pass rush is not there. They are not able to stop much at all. So this feels to me like shootout central. I don't know who will win this thing. I'm not the greatest predictor on earth, but my trust is with Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers.
Sneaky good game. I mean, Deshaun Watson, yeah, I think, is playing awesome right now. Lights out, really, the last 3 or 4 weeks. And you bringing up the Packers defense makes sense to me, Mark, because if you look at their DVOA, the Packers defense is actually ranked below the Texans defense. They're 30th in the league. That's how bad they are. And if you watch Watson, you know, he's on point. He's making good decisions. I think he actually has a greater depth of offensive playmakers around him than Aaron Rodgers does. Now, he doesn't have Devontae Adams, and he doesn't have Aaron Jones. He certainly doesn't have the running game. But I think this Texans offense can move the ball quite well. I'll be watching Bradley Roby in this matchup. He is one of the rare cornerbacks in the league that matches up against the opposing number one, and that's a tough matchup. You'll see it on the other side, too, probably Jair Alexander against Will Fuller. So Roby versus Adams, I don't know. Adams, to me, is probably going to cook him up in this matchup, and Rodgers is really going to need it because I think he's missing some of the depth with Alan Lazard out right now.
Yeah, this podcast is kind of like a microcosm for the greater NFL world's viewpoint of the Packers right now, because, you know, what team perception-wise was hurt more by a game than the Packers in week six? Because we went into first 4 weeks, they're playing incredible football on offense especially, not turning it over, running the ball, passing the ball, defense getting the stops, and they're cruising to wins to start the season. They hit their bye, and now after this game, it's like it's welcome back all those doubts again about the Packers and last season, you know, when they were 13-3 but didn't get any love from certain groups who thought they were an overrated team. Mark, you were one of them. Now is it time to start looking at them that way again? One thing I didn't like, I really didn't like how the Packers just kind of laid down. They got bullied a little bit for the first time on the offensive line, which had been so good to start the season. And Aaron Rodgers and the whole team just kind of like put up the white flag to the point where Aaron Rodgers was on the bench midway through the fourth quarter against Tampa. So now that you've taken this shot, confidence-wise as a team, which version of the Packers shows up in Houston? Because I agree with you guys. I don't think the Texans are a good team or a top 10 team in the AFC, but they're going to hang because they have a superstar quarterback. So I'm with you. Shootout City.
You know, so one of the reasons Deshaun Watson, Dan, has been playing so well is because of his left tackle, Laremy Tunsil, who you came at me on Twitter. You said I have a complicated relationship with him. I was a little hard on Tunsil in the offseason because he led the league in penalties, pre-snap penalties. I thought if you're the highest paid tackle, don't lead the league in penalties. Well, you know how many penalties he has this year? Zero. And people I trust, Brandon Thorne on Twitter, PFF's rankings have him as the number one left tackle in the league. This matchup could involve the two top left tackles in the league if David Bakhtiari is healthy enough to play. So, you know, players get better. Laremy Tunsil making the leap, worth all the money. Bill O'Brien, genius general manager after all.
All right. Okay. It's just that, yes, he had a strong year last year as well, had some penalties, and I just feel like you'd been up and down on him in general, and now that tweet jumped out to me and I said, let me engage in your mentions, and then you were so fired up and angry that I dared to do that you didn't even reply. So
I didn't get the I didn't see it till hours later,
as if we hadn't worked together for 7 years in a close
capacity.
Even
you bother, I wanted to save it for the show. This is gold right here. You know who didn't engage at all was Jadeveon Clowney going against Laremy Tunsil last week. I've never seen someone make Jadeveon Clowney look like a little kid as much as Tunsil did. It's crazy.
Jadeveon Clowney, that's a whole other topic. All right, up next in the draft, Mark Sessler.
How about this, guys? We will go Seattle at Arizona. And this game, to me, here's another defense with the Seahawks that concern me. I mean, they are 28th in sack rate in the NFL. They are not getting to the quarterback. You've got to deal with DeAndre Hopkins and Kyler Murray, who is an absolute magician on the ground. But I'm watching this Cardinals offense sometimes, and I think that they're still in search of themselves too. I don't entirely trust them. I don't think that they played especially well against the Jets a couple weeks ago. They weren't magical last week. They just do some things really well. That said, I mean, you know what I feel about the Seahawks, guys. I feel like every Seahawks game is essentially the same. They can get into trouble. They will play, you know, against the Vikings. I think they played their worst half of the season. But there's something about the Seahawks that they can overcome that kind of a half. And so this is, to me, is sort of an acid test for the Cardinals. I know they beat Seattle a year ago, but I'm not sure I trust this Cardinals offense more than I did the Cardinals offense from last season.
Yeah, I don't either. They're a strange team, the Cardinals. They're 4-2. You got to give them some credit for that. They're an organization that has not won a lot of games in recent years. So they're beating bad teams. They've had the fourth easiest schedule in the league so far this season, and now it gets a lot tougher. I think the Kyler Murray scramble right now is pretty much the most unstoppable play in football. I saw people like kind of getting on the Cowboys defense for not being ready for some of the scrambles. Like, no one is ready for that. But can you do that quarter after quarter? I don't trust it as much as those Seahawks receivers going up against these Cardinals cornerbacks. Patrick Peterson has not played that well this year. Drake Kirkpatrick has not played that well this year. And you have to just trust Seattle a little more and see what Pete Carroll did defensively during the bye week. Sounds like they're probably not getting Jamal Adams back, but does he come up with any answers? Because that was not a Pete Carroll defense that we really saw over the first 5 weeks of the season.
This is going to be a great game. What a great quarterback game. Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, and we talked about it earlier this week on the podcast. Murray, his playmaking ability is pretty terrifying for a defense. And now you have Seattle, can't stop anybody. And this feels like potentially a huge Kyler Murray game. That's the kind of vibe I'm getting right now, because and Seahawks fans are so angry over in power rankings land that I still have them ranked at 5. They want them at 1 because they're undefeated. But this is a team that has major issues on defense, and I just think that unless Russell Wilson continues to play at this all world level, and maybe he will, and they'll be okay and go 13-3 or 14-2, but there's the other side of this and how these things typically work out, where if one side continues to be a major issue and you're trying to cover up for them every week, well, that means a slump's coming. And eventually, when the offense cools off, the defense isn't there to pick you up and you lose a few games. I kind of see that coming, but maybe with Seattle, and I think it's going to happen here in Arizona. I like the Cardinals.
Wow.
Well, I will have to disagree on one front, because I think that Seattle can get by with these defensive issues. And I believe in their desire and their overall team makeup and the whole Seahawks energy enough that I am going to confidently lock up the Seattle Seahawks this week. That's my lock.
You're such a predictable
Take
locker. I knew it.
That's the yeah. You've hey, skated by. You
I got
lucked
burned
out
last
with the
week.
Seahawks over Vikings lock. The Seahawks over Patriots lock. You love these Seahawks close games.
You know what? Last week I tried to get fancy. I went with a young Carolina Panthers team. I got burned hard. It dropped me out of first place. I'm going back to the reliable Seattle organization that I trust with my heart.
Time now for Road to Victory, presented by the United States Marine Corps. Greg, you're up next.
All right, I'm going down to the dirty NFC South, taking a Panthers-Saints matchup with all sorts of connections. That's why I like this division. They're always just very incestuous. And this year, you got Joe Brady, the Panthers play caller on offense, going back to the Superdome, where he helped the Saints offense, where he knows Teddy Bridgewater, obviously very well. He knew him in New Orleans. Now he's got him in Carolina, and he's going up against Dennis Allen, the Saints defensive coordinator. When you look at these two rosters, the Saints are so much more talented that the Carolina Panthers have to win with scheme, and they have to make Dennis Allen do dumb things, which Dennis Allen does sometimes. I think he overthinks it. He loves to let everyone know that Dennis Allen is calling the blitzes and doing some wild stuff, because when you just match them up, obviously the Saints are way more talented. I think their defensive line looks better right now, now that they have Marcus Davenport back. They're deeper, they're better, and yet I just think this Panthers coaching staff can keep it close and make the Saints very nervous.
I would be concerned about one aspect of the Saints defense, though, and it's shined in the past, but Marshawn Lattimore is giving up a perfect passer rating at the moment. You know, Janoris Jenkins has been out of the mix. Like, you can pass on this team. On the flip side, Carolina runs sort of a zone defense that has not given up a ton of big plays down the field, but you can kind of operate these sort of shorter passing game, high percentage throws on them, and that is perfect for Drew Brees. And you're getting Michael Thomas back, and Alvin Kamara, you can run on Carolina too. That has been a consistent issue for that defense, a pretty banged up defense too that lacks some pass rushers right now. So I think this sets up well for Thomas's return, for Alvin Kamara, who was amazing the last time we saw him. And so this Saints team, you know, well-rested. I like their situation here. In a tight one, though, these Panthers, they're frisky. They don't get blown out. They keep it interesting. That Matt Rule fan club is still vibrant. Don't talk to me about the Bears game. It's still alive. People are still subscribing to the newsletters. We're going strong.
Yeah, the Saints, to me, feel well set up here. I'm with you. That was such a huge win to steal on Monday Night Football to get into your bye and then regroup a little bit. And you would think Lattimore, unless he's, you know, injured and he's not himself right now and there's something else going on, will get better. And I'm not too worried about the Panthers. I think they'll score some points here. But at the same time, Michael Thomas is back. And it's interesting what's going on with Michael Thomas, because it's the high ankle sprain that knocked him out for 3 weeks, but then a suspension for punching a teammate. And he's known as a volatile personality behind the scenes. And is this under control? Or is there something spiraling behind the scenes with the Saints? Because this guy, I think Kamara would be the Dave Dameshek Jenga piece for this offense. But Michael Thomas is the guy that really makes Drew Brees better than average at this stage of his career. So if you have Michael Thomas healthy, motivated, in the right place headspace-wise. Emmanuel Sanders starting to figure things out, get the chemistry going with a healthy Kamara and Breeze. They're going to continue to score points. I like the Saints in this game, but I respect the Panthers. It could be a frisky game for them.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think we need, I mean, we need a little bit less of Taysom Hill. He was the forcing Taysom Hill.
He's dying on Taysom Hill. And this is our weekly segment. He's not living anymore on Taysom Hill. He's dying with Taysom Hill.
I still think he's a super fascinating player, but a gadget player is what he probably is at this point, and it didn't look right. And I mean, I know, you know, Twitter middle school had their fun with all that business, but I think some of it was correct that this is like either you're going to put Breeze in on these plays. But when he was yanked, I mean, there was one moment where Breeze was just staring at Sean Payton with like a 1,000 yard stare, like, why is Taysom Hill in the
field? They don't trust Breeze on third and long, and I don't totally blame them. I think you're right,
but he converted several of them in a big spot on Monday Night Football. That's why it was so odd to me when Breeze was warming up in the second half and making plays. They were still pulling him off the field for Taysom Hill. So I don't know. There just was some type of, I don't know, incongruity there.
It's fair.
Oh, I didn't mean to shut you down there, right?
Wow.
No, I mean, I love that Mark has finally given up. I feel like we should, you know, celebrate or, you know, not on plant the flag. It's a big day in our podcast history.
Look, let's use him correctly. Put him in a position to succeed. That's all. You know, we're getting a little bit too much. A little bit too much is a little bit too much.
All right. That was Road to Victory presented by the United States Marine Corps. All right. That brings up the old Zeuser in the picks. I will take, let's see, Hamana Bucks at Raiders. All right. So, listen. What are you going to say about the Bucs right now? What can you say in a critical sense to doubt them after what we saw against the Packers? They are, when they are right, the most complete team in the league. The defense is absolutely on fire right now, and it's been that way for most of the season. Look at the numbers. Look at the advanced analytics. This team is for real on that side of the ball. And what it's done is created a perfect situation here in that Tom Brady does not have to be the savior. He doesn't need to be 2007 Tom Brady. He just needs to be a super glorified game manager himself, and he's been exactly that and sometimes better. So I'm feeling really good about the Bucs right now. It'd be very tough for me to pick against them. And, you know, the Raiders right now, obviously they have a situation with COVID-19 that's created some indecision around them, and that's been a distraction. It feels like every team gets hit with this at some point. It's their turn. But they are also now coming off a bye, and they are feeling great, or they were, because they just beat the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes in Arrowhead. So two teams with a lot of confidence. The game is being played at the Death Star. Mark Sessler, what do you think?
I mean, you know, there was a lot of heat on Paul Gunther because for what you might like about the Raiders offense, the defense for a while now has been highly suspect. They held the Chiefs to one score in the second half. I mean, it was just, that is, if this team is able to knock out Kansas City and then turn around and take care of the Bucks, I mean, we have to call that a massive doorway they've walked to into a world of completely different expectations for this Raiders club. And there's a little thing I like about this game is that, remember back when the coronavirus just started and we were all in our little homes doing our free agency show, and there were whispers that the Raiders wanted Tom Brady.
Yeah.
And what did that mean for Derek Carr? And I mean, Derek Carr is the kind of quarterback that I get that he's like a really nice guy, but he seems to hold on to slights. That's the way I perceive him to be.
Rabbit ears.
And I think it's got to be lodged in his mind that my own team had interest in Tom Brady, which is not a sin because it's Tom Brady. But now you have Derek Carr, who has like 11 touchdowns, one pick, 70-plus completion percentage. He's playing lights out. We saw what I wanted to see from him last week, which is aggressive Derek Carr. The thing that we have been missing, the reason I found him slightly bland, it's happening. They've got the guys to throw to. This makes this game highly interesting to me because the offense is transforming before our eyes a little bit.
Wait a second, Sizzler. You just sold your lot on Taysom Hill. Are you coming over to my used car lot? Are you coming over?
I mean, I'm driving by the car lot and taking a look at what's on stock, and I may wander over there during my lunch break.
You're welcome. Just so it's known.
Some great quarterback play is there. I'm with you, Mark. And you mentioned the one interception this year. That, to me, showed the maturation of Derek Carr. It was against the Chiefs. It was on 3rd and 1. They decided to go for it in at the part of the field you can live with an interception. He got aggressive. It didn't work out, but I'm with you. I saw them going deep down the field in situations where they normally would run it. Now, can they do it week after week? I don't know. You're giving all this credit to the Raiders defense because they had a good second half against the Chiefs. Well, they played the first half too, and they stunk in that. I mean, they gave up a ton of touchdowns.
Work in progress.
To me, the biggest mismatch in this game is when the Bucs have the ball and their offensive line goes up against the Raiders' defensive line, and you hand the ball off to Ronald Jones, or you're protecting for Tom Brady. And it's going to be a great matchup, as you said, you know, when the Raiders have the ball. But when the Bucs have the ball, I trust the Bucs' offense a little better. They're just getting it going. I mean, they're adding elements. Godwin's healthy again. Gronk is doing a little. Everyone is playing a little better, and that's why I feel as confident as I have all year.
Is he gonna?
Which is why I'm probably going to ruin my undefeated locks record, because once you feel yourself a little bit, you get it wrong. I'm locking up the box.
There it is. I love it. And also not a surprise. You know, we work together so much. I know we all know who we like and don't like. Greg's never going to be sold. He's never coming to the used car lot. So he saw that great performance against Kansas City is ultimately a mirage, like in Las Vegas, the tall casino building.
Well, I mean, Dan, like his nickname is Used Car Lot. I feel like that's
pretty rough.
Something he's going to love.
You can only go with one like weird nickname per game, and I'm riding the Bulls assance right now, the Todd Bowles defense. And how about Carlton Davis? He shut down Devontae Adams. He can do the same, we'll see, to Henry Ruggs. And if you do that, then this Raiders offense not as good.
Some people are just better as defensive coordinators. There was no Bulls assance with the Jets, I can tell you that. All right. Snakes the old Zeuser. So let's stay. So that was Sunday Night Football. How about a little Monday Night Football? The Chicago Bears.
You're going to be busy at night.
The Los Angeles Rams. You guys put your feet up. Enjoy your night off because I got this. Another good game. This is a good week. This is a good week in the National Football League, in our league. The Bears, nobody respects the Bears. They're 5-1, though. I mean, at what point does that change? Are they just one of those teams that nobody ever kind of gives love or takes seriously, and then they're 11-5 and hosting a home game in January? You know what? They might be that team. But go show me. Show me here in primetime now. The Rams are a good team. The Rams are not a great team. They're coming off a frustrating primetime loss in week 6 against the 49ers. I still like the Rams. Don't love them. Don't think they're a powerhouse. So if the Bears are actually good, capital G good, this should be a game that they could hang in and potentially even win. And that's what it's about. We talked about it, Mark. Defense is kind of like an extinct species in the NFL. Well, the Bears are kind of like this exception where they're winning with their defense and they're turning the ball over and they're getting just enough quarterback play. I don't think it's sustainable as a Super Bowl contender, but I think it's sustainable in week 7 against the Rams. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think that. I mean, the Bears have come to us from 1972, and I think their style is atypical to what most fans would prefer to see. I think that includes some Bears fans, too, are mystified that the offense seems to constantly be going in reverse. But they're 5-1, and if you look at what they did against Carolina, I mean, they frazzled Teddy Bridgewater, who's been pretty good this season. I mean, interception on the first drive, interception on the last drive, caused a fumble right in the middle of the game of Mike Davis. That was the game right there. I mean, that's the way they want to win. They want to win these games like 20-19, and I think they can do it. I mean, my concern is that, I don't know, we've been watching football for like 3 decades. Like, there have been like 6 Bears teams that went 12-4
they're always
with
like
stellar
this.
Defenses and questionable quarterback play, and they're one and done typically in the playoffs. Or do they go to the Super Bowl and play the Colts and operate in one of the most boring Super Bowls in our life in a downpour? So I don't know, flip a coin.
or they get a Coach of the Year award that you totally forget. Dick Duran, Coach of the Year. Matt Nagy,
yeah,
Coach
Dickie.
Of the Year. It's a similar team, and the defense is going to keep them in this game, partly because their secondary is so good. And we know Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks are good, but I don't think Kyle Fuller has been getting enough love this year, or Eddie Jackson. Those two guys are dynamic. And Kyle Fuller had a year a couple years ago where he was an all-pro type player. He is playing at that level again. So whether he's matched up against Robert Woods or Cooper Kupp, and then you got Eddie Jackson, they're not even throwing at him anymore. He's complaining about that. It's a really great defense, and they are a different offense, I will say, with Nick Foles. If nothing else, they've changed how they're not succeeding, and now they're really pass heavy. I mean, they were really run heavy with Mitch Trubisky. Now they're really pass heavy. I think that's the way to go because Foles makes a couple plays every week. And you look at David Montgomery, and there's just not a lot of juice in that running game, not a lot of explosion there. I just don't know if that matches up well with the Rams. When I think the Rams, I think you attack their weakness in terms of their run defense. They've got some good players in the secondary. Can the Bears move the ball? Because they are definitely like a pass heavy, Matt Nagy, I'm going to try to be like Andy Reid type of team now.
One thing that jumped out to me just looking at some numbers ahead of this game, the Rams are 19th in the NFL in points per game on offense.
Wow. It feels that way watching their games sometimes.
But it's like, I mean, there's been a general feeling that they've gotten better post Todd Gurley. And maybe
they're much better per play. You know, they're having these games where there's not a lot of plays. There are a lot of running. I mean, they're one of the most run-heavy teams in the league. And until last week, they were super efficient passing, but then that fell apart. We haven't seen them do it against anyone but the NFC East, though. That's worth pointing out.
Yeah. I didn't
like the lack of connection between Kupp and Goff last week. I mean, that kind of frazzled them and messed them up. Why do I keep saying frazzled on the show?
I don't know. I'm frazzled that you're saying frazzled so much. But they're usually spot on, Kupp and Goff. I expect that to be okay. Let's pick this game real quick. I'm curious about this one.
I got the Rams in a close one. I don't like what I'm seeing where they're a heavy favorite, if you know what I'm saying. But I do think the Rams sneak it out.
Rams 22-20.
I think the Bears win again, and everyone is like quietly annoyed by it. Just like,
except for Bears Twitter. Bears Twitter has taken over. Them and Patriots Twitter would be in the Super Bowl of annoying Twitter of getting in my mentions. I see you, Bears Twitter.
Yeah, maybe if the Bears win, they can get into the top 10 of the power rankings too. You know, just
inside the building. That's what they're pushing for. That's the motivation.
All right, up next, Greg. You're on the clock.
Oh, boy. All right. Let's go to another early game this week. I know this sounds crazy, but I am intrigued to see Washington-Dallas just out of morbid curiosity. Because this game matters in the NFC East. And, man, I haven't seen a week as ugly as it's been in Dallas. And I look at this Washington team, and I think they look at what Kyle Allen did last week, and I think they convince themselves, you know what? It's like, I know Kyle Allen had that fumble, but he did have the drive right afterwards. He did make plays, and I think their offense ran a little better. Hey, we've got a top 10 defense right now. I really believe that Washington does. Dallas is replacing their offensive line again. Like, they're missing their replacement left tackle is out. Like, this is a very winnable game for Washington, even if it might not be very pretty to watch.
I mean, the pressure on Andy Dalton last week and just the tackle play, I think interior of the line was okay, but the tackle play was a disaster. Yeah, I don't think you want to go into games and have Andy Dalton throw the ball 54 times. That's not a formula that's ever really worked with the Andy Dalton family line. Cowboys to me, I mean, and you just, the reports coming out this week. Yeah, I had one friend that's kind of close to the team saying that the players a while ago were saying that this defensive scheme was too complex. And you've heard that a couple times, like Rex Ryan's defense got that in Buffalo, where like you're in week six and the players aren't playing off instinct. And the Dallas defense has like these interesting parts on paper. I mean, you'd say that someone like Leighton Vander Esch coming back would be big for him and for Jalen Smith, and Jalen Smith is being paid a lot of money and is not playing the way he has in the past. This feels like, I don't want to like overreact, but I don't even think it is overreacting. And Dan, I think you mentioned this too, but I had the same feeling, like Mike McCarthy, is he here next year if this thing continues to spiral this way? Or is Mike, I would put it this way, is Mike McCarthy willing to remove some of his friends from this staff upon further review? I mean, this is a disaster. When the Cowboys players are talking this way anonymously, it's still October. That's a car crash.
Yeah. I mean, Jerry just turned 78, and if this thing truly goes off the rails and there's a mutiny, I don't see why he wouldn't just say, okay, I gotta try this again, because I still have this talented core, and I can't waste potentially 2 years with Mike McCarthy if he doesn't have this team believing in him.
First place Cowboys.
I know people keep on saying that with this NFC, all these NFC East teams, but does it ultimately matter if they're terrible and the organization is drowning? Because what does it mean even getting to play a January game if you have all these problems? Now, that said, I don't love Mike McCarthy, and I also don't think the Cowboys are going to completely death spiral here. I don't think they're going to go 4-12. I think there's a lot of people that want to see that because it's sometimes fun to watch the world burn, to watch America's team burn. But the Washington football team, they lose every week now, and we could talk about how great their defense is, but they're losing every week. And Kyle Allen, listen, that's a guy I don't believe in. So as much as like the world is on fire for the Cowboys, you know, some people could go and lock up undefeated teams and feel like, you know, okay, looking in the mirror. I'm going to be the guy that locks up the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh my gosh.
On the road, coming off a hideous Monday night loss on a short week during a team mutiny. So you could pick your Russell Wilsons, Sessler. Give me America's team to get back on track.
Dan, hold on.
Lock it up.
Hold on. I mean, at this point, these little slings and arrows, I am totally impervious to them. If we were to go look at your lock record,
you sound impervious.
It's stretching into last season. There are some unbelievable
lock it up
where you're in a home with no mirror. There isn't even a mirror on the
this
wall.
This is a bold
so
one,
I'm
though.
Fine with
this
my
is
picks.
A bold one. I mean, if when you can go against Kyle Allen, it's bold. No, I actually do think it's bold. Kyle Allen, 5 drives last week, 10 plus plays. I don't know what you're seeing. You know what I'd be worried about with Dallas though is it's their stars that like get you worried. Like Zeke is still there and isn't he the
right,
biggest
but can't
problem?
You see, I'm totally with you, Gregor, but can't you see Zeke? He's an all-pro star player. His pride
DeMarcus
is hurt.
Lawrence.
People are doubting him. Can't you see 200 yards from Zeke? Can't you see it? Maybe not.
I don't
it's
know.
Against Washington.
I start well, all I want all I think about when Jane Slater, you know, does these reports is like, all right, who is it? Like who's feeling comfortable right. enough to just bury right. it? It definitely feels defensive minded because the offensive staff is pretty similar to a year ago. So you start thinking about, all right, who are the big stars on defense? Things aren't going too well,
Lawrence.
And I think it's a reminder to the Dallas coaches. You know, return those Jane Slater texts. You don't give her the respect, you take some heat.
She'll slay you. All right, up next, Mark Sessler.
All right. Well, I get that, you know, the Q rating has tumbled below Earth's surface at this point, but I'm going Cleveland, Cincinnati.
I left it for you. That's the game I wanted, but I assumed we're not allowed, you know.
What's that, Greg?
That's the game I wanted, but I just assume we're
we're all afraid of you, Mark.
Do that.
Oh, I'm not there yet. I know that Dan is. I've taken the Jets 2 weeks in a row, and it has literally lowered my enjoyment of human life. So I'm not going down that road again. But I am going to stick with Cleveland here. But you have to. I think the thing is, if you're a Browns fan, like there's a lot to be excited about foundationally. That I think Kevin Stefanski has shown through his kind of even-keel demeanor week after week that he is someone that I think is going to be around for a while. The front office is not battling with the coaching staff for the first time since I was like 18 years old, so that's something positive. But you are clearly looking at a team that it has a defined ceiling, and it's within your own nasty division. You got walloped 38 points you allowed to the Ravens, 38 to the Steelers. The defense is messy. And it's if Myles Garrett is taken out of a game to any extent, they've got nothing to hang their hat on. I mean, I really like Denzel Ward, the player, but he has not played up to what I've seen in the past from him. Their secondary has been a huge mess. And I start with the offense. Like, Baker Mayfield, look, I want to believe in Baker Mayfield. I want Baker Mayfield to be treated with patience because he is, like some other young quarterbacks, in his fourth scheme, multiple coaching staffs, you know, a lot going on around him. But I have to look at his play and say this is someone who is locking on. There is a play last week, and it's the Minkah Fitzpatrick interception. It's a few others, too, where he, it seems pre-snap, is locking onto his target, and come hell or high water, and it was hell last week, he is going to throw the ball to that player. And the problem there is you're not seeing Minkah Fitzpatrick in that equation. And I'm not trying to, you know, diagnose what Baker Mayfield is seeing or not, but it just looks to me that he is not able to visualize the field, and he's struggling to. There was a play last week where Jarvis Landry, who talked about the fact that he played with a broken rib after the Colts game, so that's not helpful, was wide open though between a bunch of Steelers defenders, wide open, and Baker just didn't see it. And it's a throw that someone who's more advanced inside a scheme would see. He was punished. And so if you can get to Baker Mayfield, and now you're looking at the Ravens, who just signed Yannick Ngakoue, the Steelers and Ravens are basically the teams they cannot get to. I do trust them, because the last time Cleveland got killed, it was Cincinnati the next week, and it's like, all these Browns, they're under a lot of pressure to show up and play crisp football against the Bengals. And they did. They played their best game. But Nick Chubb is not there now, and everyone's saying, "Oh, you don't have Kareem Hunt. You don't have Nick Chubb. You're fine because you have Kareem Hunt." I just don't buy into that. Nick Chubb is a totally different type of runner who is Cleveland Browns football to the core. So I am a little concerned in general about this season. I don't like teams that are just wild card fodder that get beaten up by a better organization. But it's a big step for Cleveland to be 4-2 right now and not 2-4.
I think I figured out a formula. When Mark is nervous about the Browns, the monologue goes longer. And it's just, you're just downloading all these self-doubts and all these things in your head right now. And that was a big one. You know what? I'm going to say something, Mark. Too much on Twitter on Sunday. Oh, same old Browns. Oh, the Browns. Oh, they still suck. And like, no, man. I mean, that was a tough game. Your quarterback is banged up and you're on the road against a legit Super Bowl contender. You got your ass kicked. That happens sometimes. Now, here's the test, though.
It's happened twice.
If it's, I know, I understand, but that was also week one and that was the Ravens. Here's the test to me. Don't get beat now in Cincinnati, because then you are the same old Browns. Then it's like, here we go. And you cut a month from now and they're 4-6 or something. Like, get the ship going in the right direction again, and don't let negativity build, because with teams like the Browns and other downtrodden franchises in history, once that negativity starts to get way down the ship, it sinks quickly. So get the W, get back on track, and I think this is a winnable game. I mean, Cincinnati is not a powerhouse by any stretch.
They're not, but I think it's a big-time test. I suspect Mark is a little nervous about this one. I would be. I really struggled on who to pick in this game. I did take the Browns to win a close one because they have the better offensive line. I think they have the better coaching staff right now, but they don't have the better quarterback necessarily, and that is worrisome. I mean, to me, that's the bummer so far out of six games with Stefanski, is Baker's not playing confidently. So you can... We talk about him off the field, on the field, whatever. Like, he's got this swag. Like, he has the opposite of swag when he's playing right now. Like, he bails out after the first read. We saw a lot of that last year. Mark pointed out kind of how he's locking on to receivers. The Bengals defense has been a little better this year. They're dealing with some controversy after our guy Tyler Dragon, formerly of Around the NFL, broke some news that Carlos Dunlap and Geno Atkins not too happy about getting benched lately. But this Bengals team is all right. Like, I don't think they're a pushover. I think you look at that they don't, you know, necessarily have a quarterback edge in this game. You know, if both guys are protected, I think I trust Joe Burrow like a little bit more than Baker Mayfield right now.
And Cincinnati definitely gave Cleveland a ride in that primetime game. It wasn't like I know the final score maybe looked like it wasn't as close, but they went back and forth. They had a chance there. Mark, it snakes to you.
Well, I'm just so happy that I get to continue my viewing relationship with Justin Herbert of the Chargers, who will be hosting the Jacksonville Jaguars and Gardner Minshew.
Nice spot.
I am telling you right now, I don't go back and watch many of these games twice because there's just too much to deal with in life and everything else going on. But I have found myself like late at night checking out the Justin Herbert throws, because I just love the way he is a rocket. I mean, you can just see it. And I think that despite the Chargers' record, and despite the fact that, you know, we mentioned this, they're 3-13 in these close games, these one-score games. That's the bigger issue. I think this is a playoff team that is begging the coaching staff to, you know, when they build these leads, to put the foot on the gas and squeeze the life out of the opponent. There's just something about the DNA of this team, and we all recognize it, that kind of just allows these opponents back in the game. And you've got a quarterback now that allows you to do something completely different. And his chemistry with his receivers, for a guy that didn't get a lot of practice time, no preseason, to come in and do what he's done right away, I love it. I mean, and I, you know, Gardner Minshew to me has sort of become sort of the same guy every week. And it's not all bad. I see some really good stuff with Gardner Minshew. There was one play that I just thought, this is him. He was under total duress against the Lions. He is sort of circling between would-be tacklers. But, you know, where a lot of quarterbacks would have been taken down, he escapes. He has that escapability. He's slippery. And he underhands the ball to James Robinson, who darts upfield with it. But then a couple plays later, he lofts a pass deep downfield into coverage, a little bit dangerous, and it's picked off. So you take the good and the bad with Gardner Minshew. The diagnosis is this guy is going to be in the NFL probably as a backup after this season for a really long time. I think he does a lot of things really well. But when you watch Justin Herbert, I look at my fascination at Gardner Minshew and say, it sometimes feels more appropriate to have that fascination attached to someone who's going to be in our life as a starter for like 15, 20 years.
Right. I mean, this is...
Man, Minshew and Taysom Hill this week, Mark.
You have to evolve.
Transition.
You have to, like, yes. You know, we're in a time where you have to be able to say, I liked this, but now I like this more, and it's because of the evidence I'm seeing.
Well, yeah, Justin Herbert. I mean, it's no comparison. And you're going to like him more after this week because he's playing the Jaguars defense. I mean, this is the worst defense in the league. They're picking up guys off the street, and they're starting them that week. Last week, Kamalea Correa and who was the other one that they signed? Jabal Sheard. They signed him like 2 days before the game, and then they're both committing costly penalties in the game. I mean, that's what happens. So this is a game the Chargers, you would think, would be able to roll up on him. I want to see if they can do that, too, because a lot of positive things going on with them. Joey Bosa and Keenan Allen were clearly not 100% before the bye. They're back. They're healthy. It sounds like they're going to get Brian Bulaga back at right tackle. Maybe not Trey Turner, but their line has been a huge problem. That's good. You might get Melvin Ingram and Justin Jones back, two of their starting defensive linemen. So the cavalry is coming, and this Chargers team is 1-4. You got to just take care of business and destroy this Jaguars team, who is kind of the team I think I overrated because of week one and even week two. Like, there's always one team. Remember we were excited about the Bengals after 1 week last year? It's like, ooh, Zach Taylor. This guy's a great young coach. I think I did that with the Jaguars this year, and it's taken me a while to move off that take, but it has not been a good take.
You mentioned Joey Bosa too, right, Greg?
I did not.
Okay, because he played. He only played 28
snaps.
Or did
I? Yes, I did. I can't even remember what I said.
He only played 28 snaps against the Chiefs. He had knee, ankle, and triceps injuries. This is a sport for tough, tough people. So he gets that week, and that will make the defense better as well. My feeling on the Chargers, because I like the Chargers too. Maybe a sneaky team of ATN candidate here. I have them higher than any 1-4 team should be in the power rankings because you just like everything about them except for their record and their ability to close out games. So you look at where they're at right now. You know, they won 16-13 in week one with Tyrod, a game that Randy Bullock helped them out with. But since it was a 3-point loss to the Chiefs, a 5-point loss to the Panthers, a 7-point loss to the Bucks, and a 3-point crusher to the Saints. So go ahead, like Greg said, go spank the Jaguars who stink. And get to 2-4, and then you go to Denver and you see what happens. But do not do anything. Do not give us a Chargers moment against the Jaguars at home. That would be a disgrace, and then we will spit venom at you, Chargers, here at the ATN Podcast.
Cease and desist with that nonsense.
Yes. You do not want to listen to the Sunday night show, Chargers fans, if your team lays an egg against the Jags in a big spot in Week 7. All right. Up next is Greg Rosenthal.
All right, I'm going to take the Lions-Falcons here. There aren't many games left on the board, and I am a little intrigued by these two teams, and I don't know if I'm annoyed they're playing each other. Maybe it's good they're playing each other. I want to see like which one is going to be a little friskier down the stretch here, or at least through the midseason, because the Lions defense came out. They balled out last week against Jacksonville. I'm not going to take anything away. I know the matchup was good, but the energy and the aggressiveness, the game plan, it was pretty awesome. And the Falcons were even more impressive. I mean, it shouldn't be that surprising that getting Julio Jones back and Julio Jones looking like Julio Jones makes a huge difference. You know, it does. He's back. The secondary is a lot healthier. It gives them more options defensively for Raheem Morris. I've thought that their offensive line in Atlanta, which has been a trouble spot for really the entire Dan Quinn era, now Raheem Morris, has actually had its best year, and they're okay. Like, they kind of fixed that problem. They should be able to put up some points. And I'm curious if they're going to be dangerous down the stretch. I kind of like the Falcons in this game, even with Detroit coming off a pretty good performance against Jacksonville.
I really like seeing DeAndre Swift be what I think the beginnings of what they thought he could be. And I hope his role just continues to increase. And, you know, Adrian Peterson, we get it, Hall of Famer. But, I mean, DeAndre Swift is why I got on this Detroit Lions thing in the start. I don't trust their defense a lick, though, and I see this as, like, another rampant shootout, which, you know, shootouts used to be like, hey, there's two of them a week, and that's the game you got to go. Now it's like eight games a week seem to be these shootouts because defense has apparently decided not to show up in 2020.
Do you trust the Lions, though, to shoot in a shootout? That's where I'm not totally sure.
What have we seen from Matthew Stafford so far?
I do against the Falcons defense, yes.
Sure.
I wouldn't say week to week, but the Falcons defense seems to be like a gigantic open barn door that just says, you know, bring the whole family in, bring all the animals and pets in, and have your way inside our barn.
2-3 the Lions are, and yeah, the Matthew Stafford that
what a barn that would be.
Yeah.
The Matthew Stafford that was playing before the back injury last year, if that guy was playing for the Lions, maybe they're above 500 right now. So they kind of need him to jump his play a little bit. The Falcons, you kind of feel it, or at least I do, that this is a team that is ready to hit the old dynamite thing. What's the thing that you push down?
Here's the thing, though. I mean, you know, they played as well as any team in week seven. Yeah, but I don't want to put too much that Raheem Morris solves their team, but they put the bang thang on those Vikings. It was 33-7 with a couple minutes left in that game.
Look at you getting younger.
Another disaster show, though.
I'm just saying. It was like, that was an impressive 1 week performance. Let's see.
How about your boy,
Youngway Koo? Let Koo into the kicker club with some of the stalwarts. He's hitting 50 yarders now. His story that he's now carving out a real career is pretty surprising based on where he started with the Chargers.
That's no joke. Yeah, he's having a nice year. Have we mentioned that Kai Forbath is signed with the Rams now?
Wow. He's got to be in prime time. Maybe. We don't know if he's starting. They're not announcing that yet.
What was the sandwich prop that you had that he would hit a game winner in a regular season game?
Let's check in with the great Nick Fortier, gogetmylunch.org. The old Zeuser said, well, the old Zeuser also said the Jets enter week 17 with a mathematical path to the playoffs. But the old Zeuser also said,
I'll take a Reuben.
Kai Forbath hits a game-winning field goal within the final minute of regulation or OT. Three sandwiches on the line. He was not on the team at the time. He's been working out like crazy. He's been on a couple practice squads. The Rams have a kicker that's far inferior to Greg DeLeg, who's in Dallas now. So maybe it actually happens. That's a little kicker sidetrack there. Anything else? My point was, yes, they might score points with Matt Ryan and healthy Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. But it just, I don't know. I feel like the Falcons and Arthur Blank, another owner that's getting up there in age, they might be looking for the next stage of whatever the organization is at this point.
Sure.
And it makes for a fascinating offseason if Matt Ryan, and I know there's all sorts of salary cap implications involved there, but Julio Jones, like, these are guys both on the other side of 30 for an organization that really needs a fresh start. We'll see what happens. But it was nice to see both of those guys ball out in week six, if for no other reasons that, you know, Falcons fans and teams that are root for a winless bad franchise, it's just nice to have a nice Sunday every once in a while.
They just ate a big Game 7 Braves L, too. Atlanta is a tough sports town.
It's nice, Dan, because Dan just doesn't want another team taking that number one pick away from the Jets. So it's, you know, whenever you can get a win in there for your...
Yeah. They were never going to be... Rash bags. That's not a 1-15 team, the Falcons. I never thought of them as a real risk in that realm. All right. I'm up. The Chiefs, Broncos still there?
Yeah, I didn't want another late afternoon game distracting me from...
Look at that.
That was my thinking, too.
What a value add for the old Zeuser in the biggest of all spots. Chiefs at Broncos. Yeah, sign me up for Patrick Mahomes on a Sunday. And I get to really watch closely this Denver Bronco team that the scientists, Chris Wessling and Greg Rosenthal, continue to salivate over as a team that's far better than their record indicates, and they're under the radar. I'm not saying they're not. I trust you guys. You're the scientists. So I just want to watch them against the top team like the Chiefs are and see if they can hang in this game. Because if they do, you guys are absolutely right. And that's fun to me. So to see how does this defense contain or attempt to contain Patrick Mahomes. Le'Veon Bell, I assume, is going to be in the mix in some capacity for the Chiefs, which is very interesting because Clyde Edwards-Helaire played so well on Monday night, and they even got good play from their backup running back, blanking on his name. The Chiefs
Darwin
backup.
Darwin Thompson?
Yeah, he had a touchdown, Darrell Williams, and he ran the ball well. So you have a backfield that was starting to gel, and now you bring in Le'Veon. How does he work into the mix? So I'm interested to see that, and I want to see if the Broncos are for real as you know a team that's better than people realize.
I think they're going to test Mahomes' patience and Andy Reid's patience and their frustration level with all these teams approaching them the same way, because the Broncos are set up in a very similar way to me defensively as the Patriots, the Raiders, and the Bills, in terms of that they can play coverage, that they're really smart in the back end, that they can let you run, except they're better at doing that. Like they do it every week, and the reason I'm so high on them, Dan, is because they're so well coached. They're a little thin on talent defensively, but Bradley Chubb's playing like a superstar, and Fangio coaches up that secondary really well, and they're sixth in DVOA. And where I could be wrong, but where the excitement comes from is the playmakers on offense. I thought Drew Lock played pretty well last week. Those two interceptions were unique. One was a miscommunication. The other was an incredible play by the Patriots, and he made a lot of good throws that players didn't come down with. And maybe it's because I'm a Patriots fan with a bunch of guys that have no juice to watch on offense. And you look at the Broncos. You add Philip Lindsay back in the mix. Juice. You add this rookie tight end, Albert O. I don't know how to say his name. He's got a lot of juice. You bring back Hamler this week. Love his route running. Juice. Jerry Jeudy. Juice. Melvin Gordon's coming back. Juice, juice. You know, it's like Noah Fant might be back this week. This is a lot of offensive speed. They remind me of the Chiefs a little bit. Now, they don't have Patrick Mahomes, but
whoa,
like a poor man. I'm just saying in terms of their team speed and the guys around them, a young group, they're fun. I love the Broncos in this game to keep it close. You know,
do you say, are you saying, Greg, that the Denver Broncos are in fact the team that is truly youngry?
They are. They're going to be hungry on Sunday. This is a tough spot. The Chiefs on a short week. Division opponent going to the altitude. I think it's a tough spot. Maybe I'm totally wrong.
No, I think watching that Patriots game, and I know that the Patriots line was banged up, but like Anthony Ciccolo created total havoc. I mean, Bradley Chubb created total havoc. The defense is for real, and I mean they're obviously exceedingly well coached. I think they can cause problems for Kansas City, and I love all the offensive parts too. Drew Lock, if anything, he's aggressive. He is willing to whip the ball downfield into double coverage and take chances. He'll pay for it sometimes.
Sure.
And I'm not convinced he's the guy that's going to be able to kind of stir the mix here and get all these guys like to produce. But I don't hate him. This offense getting healthy is kind of scary, and they kind of remind me like of the Chargers a little bit, where it's like I don't care what the record is right now.
Yep.
They could go on a little bit of a run because they don't have like Their defense is one of the better around, and their offense is like we're just waiting for them to kind of grow into what they are, and it could be pretty terrifying.
You can't kill them for losing games with Driscoll and most of the weapons at. You just can't. It was just bad luck, and unlike some teams, they're getting those weapons back. I know why Dan doesn't like this trend here, though, or this take by the scientists, because he wants John Elway to go down in infamy. Elway good.
I don't have any reason to. I am not like a Browns fan. What did John Elway do to me? Well, he did get me in the 98 AFC title game. That's true. Maybe that's where it's all stemming from. But Anthony Ciccolo Mel Gigolo is a pretty good nickname for somebody.
That is good.
I like
better
that.
Than used car lot. I mean, just if you're trying to compliment Derek Carr, I would just say.
Well, that's not him. That's not his nickname. That's just the where the.
But
fan
it just
base
sound. It
together.
Sounds too. It works too well for you somehow. You know.
You're right. It's just a little low rent, but that's okay.
I got on Drew Lock on Twitter on Sunday after those two picks, which I know the last thing anyone on Twitter wants to do is ever say Drew Lock failed. But they were ill-advised throws at that stage of the game, and it almost cost them what should have been a certain win against the Patriots.
I mean, one was like the most amazing catch.
Yeah, the Jonathan Jones pick, I'm not going to kill him on. I mean, that was crazy.
I know. That's how it works with this guy. But that's fine. I will say Broncos fans got annoyed with me. And then another Broncos fan sent me a video of three bad drops by that Denver playmaking group that should have been big throws completed, including touchdowns. Four locks. So the numbers didn't necessarily reflect the way he played in that game. So I'm excited to see how he plays. I don't root against Drew Lock. That's always been misconstrued. I don't really root against John Elway. It's just more like I don't love when certain figures just get the benefit of the doubt repeatedly. And which is
he's had a little bit of a pass. He's had a little bit of a pass for the post 2015 era. I'm with you.
That's a great game. I'm looking forward to watching it. And then I will, it's Snakes to the Zoo sort of close it out and Buffalo at Jets. Okay. This is good. I'm fine. I want to see how the Bills look. I want to see how Josh Allen looks, after two losses and I believe it was 6 days. Tough situation there for the Bills schedule wise, but they did not come out of it well, going 4-0, 4-2, against quality opponents, and it does put a seed of doubt in your mind about the Bills, but it doesn't. I'm not in a panic about Buffalo, and I don't think anybody else should be. It's a long season. There are peaks and valleys. They've hit a valley, and now it just so happens that they get the worst team in football in week 7 to get right. This is a classic get right game for the Buffalo Bills, who can kind of get brush themselves off, and Josh Allen can go nuts with 400 total yards of offense, and the defense, which has been hemorrhaging yards, perhaps they can continue to do what the Dolphins did to the Jets, which was shut them out. Sam Darnold returned to practice this week for New York. At the time of this recording, we're not sure where he's at in terms of availability, but that is progress in that direction. So this is a very different offense for the Jets if Darnold's playing, because Joe Flacco, quite frankly, can't play the guitar.
You know, frankly, how much do we really need to talk about the Jets? I mean, that if you watch the Bills Jets game though in week one, and it feels like a long time ago, that it's actually the only Jets game of the season where in the second half they had a possession where they were in the game. So you would think this is a huge mismatch, and it is. The Bills should blow them out. But the Jets played the Bills closer than they've played anyone else. And I do think you look at the Jets defensively, they're going to send the house blitzing Josh Allen, because Josh Allen did not handle the blitz well last week, or really against the Titans either. And so I don't know if that's the book out on him, but he got a little frazzled, and that'll be the Jets' approach at least, see if they can get some intercepts.
Why are you still talking about the Jets if you said that we don't need to talk about the Jets anymore?
Well, because we lost you, and I just had to start, you know.
Yeah,
right, exactly. You know, couched within that bad loss to the Chiefs, there was this one drive, and it doesn't look particularly impressive on paper, by Buffalo, this 13-play, 51-yard drive that I thought showed Josh Allen's incredible toughness. He had a couple rumbles in that game, and on that drive particularly, that just this to me is one of the more fun to watch dudes who's around. Diggs made an incredible grab on that for the touchdown, and I just think, look at this team. You lost to the Chiefs. They're going to get back on track. There are real concerns about the defense, because that was not a one-week situation. I don't know how to scout teams when they play the Jets. I mean, the Jets are clearly in fire sale mode. They traded away they released Lev Bell. They traded Jordan Willis to the 49ers. Steve McClendon was traded. Steve McClendon was traded he was traded to the Bucks, and instead of like flying, he got in his car that night and drove to Florida. That is instructive to me on how quickly he wanted out of New York. But you know, more power to them. I hope the rebuild works. What the thing I don't like, Dan, and I don't want to hang on this forever.
So we are talking about the Jets then.
No, but 3 months from now,
okay,
all these Jets fans that like super supported like Sam Darnold are going to drop him by the side of the road to get Trevor Lawrence. Like, I just like
we'll see. That's what we have a lot of time to watch him play this year too, which I think is.
I just want to see him put in a position to show us who he is, and like that's just like this. What's
Mark,
happening?
That's around what Jets fans have been waiting for 3 years, and they've never had that opportunity. And what's more likely going to happen is it's going to not happen this year. And then you're going to be in a situation, Mark. Put yourself in the shoes of Jets management. Are you going to stick with Darnold off 3 years of inconsistent play and some injuries and knowing you have to give him a second contract? Or are you going to have the number one overall pick and take this prospect that people think has Hall of Fame ceiling?
I get it. It's just like
it's a pretty bad chapter. It's bad, but that's where it is right now for this organization. All right. Josh Allen, Greg, you've famously been up and down with Josh Allen. Do you think this is a slump?
Hey, by the way, Josh Allen, give me a break. We all like, it's like, oh, everyone fill out the apology form. And the one week where we're like, hey, we got to take that L. This is a brand new Josh Allen. And then like the last 2 weeks, he's averaging 4.8 yards per attempt. I mean, give me a break, Josh. I do and I don't. I actually don't think he's been as bad as the numbers show the last couple weeks. I'm with Mark. He's so tough to take down. And he hasn't been as inaccurate as those numbers show. I'm not that worried. But I also thought the MVP talk was out was premature, and that he's not going to be as consistent until proven otherwise as a true top five or six type quarterback. So I'm not as worried, though. I'm not that worried about the last 2 weeks.
You like it better when he's Josh Phelan, yes or no?
I mean, I like that name. That was fun. It is funny. Like none of the Bills fans like are now re-apologizing back or asking for that. Yeah.
No, that will not come quickly.
All right. Before we say goodbye, let's get Ricky Hollywood in here, our wonderful producer, who, first of all, congratulations. You got off the schneid, the lock schneid. You fearlessly locked
Very
up
impressive.
The team playing the Jets in week six. The Dolphins responded with a 24-0 victory. We have instituted a new rule that is directly connected to your pick this week. Greg, do you want to let the listeners
know? Oh, yeah. You're no longer allowed to pick against the Jets. No one is.
Really? No, that's fair.
You can't do that. You were the only one that did it. This year,
or,
and no one
you know,
else
we have
will.
Certain rules in terms of whether a team is favored by a certain
right.
amount.
One score, broken those
score.
Rules, Erica.
You've broken them multiple times. You've got them wrong even when you broke the rules. So we have learned when you're losing in sports, you're someone that'll start breaking the rules.
As Erica furiously scribbles out Bills as her lock of the week, what do you got, Ricky?
No, how about this? Okay. You guys forgot to mention this, and maybe you did mention it and I wasn't listening.
Possible.
But, John Gruden was the coach of the Raiders, then he's the coach of the Bucks. He wins a Super Bowl with them, then they fire him after a 4-game losing streak.
Uh-huh.
Takes 10 years off. Gruden goes back to the Raiders, okay? He will be the first coach in history. He's going to make NFL history facing a team that he previously won a Super Bowl with as a head coach. So I have a feeling that this is not just a week 7 game for him. This is something even more important.
It's a Super Bowl.
So I think
have a lock off?
Yeah, I think he's going to be pulling off all the stops. This game means more to him than I think other games. And yes, it's Tom Brady. Yes, this offense is on fire. But I think John Gruden is up this whole week. Can't sleep.
Is she going to do it?
Prepping for this game. And this isn't the Jets. This is the Oakland Raiders.
Well,
and I'm going to lock them up.
Well, it's actually the Las Vegas Raiders.
Las Vegas.
They did move to Las Vegas, just to let you know. But I appreciate the lock here.
Okay,
but they're
sorry,
located
my
in
whole
Las
monologue.
Vegas at this point.
That's
you guys don't even give me one little thing.
That's smart,
good job, Ricky.
It's a lock off. I took the Bucks earlier. And you know what?
It's a lock off, baby.
You're 1-5. You're five games back right now. The only way to come back is me to get some wrong and you to get some right. So it's a smart way to attack me.
And think about this, Ricky. Think about this. Greg, this means a lot to Greg. He doesn't like to let it be known because he likes to pretend nothing really matters.
It doesn't. I want to get rid of
the lot. He actually gets part of his salary at the NFL is he's the guy who picks the games. So he picked the Bucks and now locked them up. For you to now come in potentially win a lock-off would absolutely crush him. And that's exciting for you, I know.
And Erica, if you...
Yeah, I'm ecstatic.
If you not only... You know, if would have to start here by knocking off Greg, but if you were to come back in classic comeback fashion and win this entire thing, I will give you my child, Colton. I will give him to you.
I think you're like 2 weeks from being mathematically eliminated, but it would be impressive. It would be impressive.
All I'm saying is you guys are giving me crap for locking up the
Jets. That's a bold one.
Do you want a 7-year-old boy?
Yeah, sure.
he's had all of his shots. He's great.
Yeah, he's healthy.
He's all caught up with his vaccines and everything. Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
All caught up.
Good stuff. Fun stuff. Enjoyed it. Well, tonight, Greg and a mystery guest. Who are you going to do this show with tonight, Greg?
We're going to have a new guest, Stephen Ruiz from USA Today for the win. Funny guy
there
on Twitter.
You go.
Look at this.
Bring him in. Give him a shot.
All right, good. Greg and Stephen Ruiz from For the Win. We'll recap Thursday Night Football. We'll be back Sunday recapping every game we just previewed here. So make sure you come back and enjoy the flagship show. All right, Dan Hedz is signing off for Ricky Hollywood, the Quiet Storm, the old boss, and everyone else behind the scenes. Thank you as always. Till Sunday.